Good morning, I'm Emmalyn Mohebi, in for Debbie Cruz. It's Thursday, October 17th. The city of San Diego is asking voters to increase the local sales tax. More on that next, but first, let's do the headlines. Starting this week, thousands of healthcare workers in the state will get a raise. Governor Newsom signed Senate Bill 525 into law last year, gradually increasing healthcare worker pay to $25 an hour. It covers all clinical and non-clinical staff supporting patient care. Laurel Lucia is the director of the healthcare program at UC Berkeley Labor Center. She says it's designed to reduce their reliance on public aid.
We estimated that nearly half of low-wage healthcare workers are enrolled in a public safety net program, or their family members are enrolled, which just underscores how low some of these wages have been.
The law aims to address worker shortages, turnover, and patient care. The number of single-family home sales in the county dropped last month. According to the Greater San Diego Association of Realtors, there was a 14% decline in sales compared to August. Sales of condos, townhomes, and attached properties had an even bigger drop, declining 22% compared to the previous month. The median price for a single-family home stayed around $1 million, but the price for attached properties dropped 4%. Altogether, home prices last month were a little higher compared to last September, but home sales in the county are still 8% higher than they were in September last year. The gloomy fall weather continues today. You'll want to grab an umbrella on your way out the door because the National Weather Service says there's a chance of light rain. It's also expected to be windy. In the inland areas, temperatures will be in the low 70s. By the coast, temps will be in the high 60s. In the mountains, it's expected to drop into the high 50s. And in the deserts, it'll be in the high 80s. The skies are expected to be clear again with no rain expected tomorrow. From KPBS, you're listening to San Diego News Now. Stay with me for more of the local news you need. The city of San Diego is asking voters whether to increase the local sales tax this November. City leaders say they need more funding to pay for infrastructure repairs. Reporter Katie Anastas says opponents want the city to cut spending instead.
Ballot Measure E would increase the sales tax within San Diego by a penny on the dollar. The city's independent budget analysts say the increase would bring in an additional $360 to $400 million in the first year. Matt Yagyagan is Mayor Todd Gloria's policy director. He told the city council in July that it would allow the city to chip away at its infrastructure backlog.
We all experience the frustration of driving over potholes, walking on cracked sidewalks, or navigating poorly lit streets. These are not just minor inconveniences. They are signs of deeper issues that must be addressed with more revenue.
The city council voted unanimously to put Measure E on the ballot. The San Diego County Taxpayers Association opposes the measure. Haney Hong is their president and CEO. He says he's concerned about city spending and that he'd be more likely to support Measure E if it had a sunset clause.
It gives the voters, it gives the taxpayers a chance to take another bite at the apple and say, okay, this is what you promised 10 years ago. Did you guys actually deliver on what you promised?
San Diego's sales tax increase would go into effect in April if approved. Katie Anastas, KPBS News.
San Diego City Council yesterday passed a new code of conduct for the city's boards and commissions. Investigative reporter Scott Rod says the council rejected a more restrictive set of rules put forward by the mayor's office.
The city of San Diego has dozens of boards and commissions made up of volunteer members. They provide guidance on a range of topics, from policing to housing to historical buildings. The new code of conduct promotes being respectful and professional. Mayor Todd Gloria's office drafted the code of conduct and originally pushed for more restrictions on board members. The initial proposal would have prohibited members from publicly criticizing any city employees, including elected leaders. The mayor's office also wanted to have prior review of board members' communications with the press. The city council struck down both of these proposals following reporting by KPBS. Here's Council President Sean Elo Rivera.
We definitely heard from enough folks who participate on boards and commissions that they were fearful that they were going to not be able to express their opinions.
The amendments came as a relief to Kelly Linden. She serves on San Diego's Climate Advisory Board.
I think it strikes a good balance between, you know, setting expectations for those who are serving on boards and commissions, with still allowing the freedom to engage as they need to with city staff, the media, and the public.
Boards and commissions are expected to self-enforce the new code of conduct. Scott Rodd, KPBS News.
Project 2025 is billed as a roadmap for the next conservative president. It would break up the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Public Matters investigative reporter Amitha Sharma reports on what that could mean for weather prediction.
The National Weather Service is housed within the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, known as NOAA. Its California weather forecast offices are staffed 24/7 to predict the weather and issue warnings to residents. Paul Heppner, co-chair of Friends of NOAA, says it is a critical system for coordinating with other government agencies.
So when they're issuing, for instance, like a winter storm warning, they're collaborating amongst the offices to see how they can synchronize and tie in their warning so you don't have gaps.
Project 2025, the brainchild of the conservative think tank the Heritage Foundation, wants to split and downsize NOAA, claiming it has become one of the, quote, drivers of the climate alarm industry. Project 2025 advocates commercializing the National Weather Service, refocusing it on data collection, and leaving the forecasts and warnings to private companies. Again, Heppner.
If you didn't have the authority of the government behind watches and warnings, then it'd be hodgepodge and almost chaotic in a way.
Former President Donald Trump has separated himself from Project 2025, but many of his former staffers helped draft it. The Heritage Foundation declined an interview on the plan. Amitha Sharma, KPBS News.
In a country that has never had a woman president, former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is known as the most powerful woman in American political history. She spoke in San Diego this week about her new memoir, The Art of Power. We hear from reporter Amitha Sharma again as she caught up with Pelosi to talk about next month's presidential election and America's current divide.
So much is at stake in next month's election. We all have been working very hard to make sure we win. We made a decision to win, to save our democracy, to save free and fair elections, the peaceful transfer of power, the independence of the judiciary. But democracy is also a personal issue, the freedom of women to have control of their reproductive freedom, the freedom of people to read books or LGBTQ, the freedom for children to be safe on the street from gun violence and the rest. People think of democracy as the Constitution, and it is, and that's at stake too, because they've said they might even terminate the Constitution. It's a global issue, and it's also an individual kitchen table issue for America's working families. So for the character of our country, we must win this election.
And yet polls show Vice President Harris tied with former President Donald Trump. Given the consequences you've just outlined, why isn't the needle moving?
We are not trusting in polls. We are owning the ground. We are mobilizing, getting out every possible vote. That's what we do every day, putting one mobilization day in front of another. You have to mobilize around a vision, and that vision has to be unifying for our country. Has to be progressive and bold, if you wish, but not menacing. And we have to have the money to get that done. So the three M's and the small donors have been so important to that. So we're getting our job done to make sure that we win the election, whatever the polls show. Actually, for as new as Kamala Harris is on the scene, she's doing very well to be tied with a former president of the United States.
Male voters, including Black and Latino men, appear to be supporting Trump again, according to the polls, in wide margins in the seven swing states, with just 3 weeks left until the election. Can Harris win them over?
This is going to be a gender gulf, because women understand what is at stake in this election. Women have the most to lose in terms of, again, women's right to choose is so fundamental as a personal issue and as an economic issue and as a respect issue. But it's also things like affordable child care, family and medical leave paid. It's issues that relate to what the vice president talked about the other day about home health care, caregivers who are sandwiched in between caring for their children and their seniors. Some of them are men, mostly they are women.
I want to pivot slightly. In your memoir, you recount how your husband, Paul Pelosi, survived a life-threatening attack. The University of San Diego just released the results of a survey that they did of Southern California elected officials. Two-thirds of them reported being threatened or harassed. What's the solution here?
When my husband was assaulted, violating the sanctity of our home, in our own home, violently assaulting him, a centimeter from losing his life, the other side, the former president and his son and the Republican governor of Virginia and Leon Musk and people like that thought that was really funny. They made a joke of it. When president was attacked in terms of the assassination attempts, we all sympathized with him. That has no place, one side or the other. When we are trying to attract so many new people to politics, especially women, but also people of color, just to have the beautiful diversity of America reflected at the table of decision making, we can't have them be afraid for the safety of their families, their children, or themselves.
A majority of Americans say that they are troubled by political violence, about the possibility of political violence. How worried are you?
Well, I think it's something to be worried about. But I do think that as soon as we get through this election, and whoever wins, we will accept the results of the election, we have to have a unifying spirit in our country. We have to try to bring people together. I've served in the Congress where we've had great differences between Democrats and Republicans, but we never had any disrespect for the patriotism or the honor of the other person. And we have to get back to a place like that. I think young people are impatient with all this, and their involvement gives me hope. I think the arts are a place that bring people together. We laugh together, we cry together, we're inspired together. We find common ground, which we never even thought we had.
That was Nancy Pelosi speaking with KPBS reporter Amitha Sharma. Community opposition to placements of sexually violent predators in the county prompted Senate Minority Leader Brian Jones to request an audit of the state program. Reporter Katie Anastas says the audit, published this week, recommends state-owned transitional housing as an option.
The conditional release program is meant to safely transition people back into communities after prison time and inpatient treatment. The audit says finding places for them to live takes nearly a year and a half on average. Jones says he supports housing sexually violent predators on state property rather than neighborhoods.
Fire camps, state prisons on the outside of the state prison, using either modular homes or RV trailers or something like that.
The Department of State Hospitals says people in transitional housing would still need community placements eventually. Katie Anastas, KPBS News.
A report released yesterday says San Diego added almost 20,000 new jobs last year thanks to an increase in defense spending. Military reporter Andrew Dyer has more on what researchers found.
The annual report comes from the UC San Diego Rady School of Management and the San Diego Military Advisory Council, a nonprofit that promotes the business side of the local military footprint. Spending is up in the region more than 12%, well above 2024's inflation rate. The report highlights the local innovation and startup economy, where defense dollars go toward technologies such as unmanned vehicles and artificial intelligence. Democrat Sarah Jacobs sits on the House Armed Services Committee. She says she thinks there's more to come as emerging technologies find their place in the military.
San Diego is really at the forefront of innovation in the defense sector, and I think it's only becoming increasingly more important.
According to the report, defense spending accounted for about a quarter of San Diego's economy, contributing more than $63 billion this year. Andrew Dyer, KPBS News.
Don't forget, today at 10:17 a.m., the Great California Shakeout will happen. That's when people throughout the state will drop, cover, and hold on for the annual earthquake drill. Well, that's it for the podcast today. As always, you can find more San Diego news online at kpbs.org. In tomorrow's podcast, we'll bring you details on the University Heights Fall Festival happening this weekend. I'm Emmeline Mohebi. Thanks for listening, and I hope you have a wonderful Thursday.